Back in Time.
Yeah, with Huey Lewis. All right. Rabbi Durbin.
Father Anderson.
I feel like I see you now at least 3-4 times a week.
It's the highlight of your week.
Yes, it is. It is. It is. Especially watching you order the same pasta dish every single Thursday when we go to Lou Ronzo's.
Yeah.
So shout out to
penne,
Lou Ronzo's.
Penne, can they sponsor us? Vodka minus the pancetta.
Yes. And then you order more bread because you feel like you need more
carbs.
You
got to stop it up. You got to stop it up.
Yeah, that is it. So I'm starting to learn your different habits. And I'm starting to learn the different ways that you roll.
Yeah, So today we are continuing the conversation that we engaged with last week, looking at why the rise in atheism, in agnosticism, in humanism, and bringing on a couple guests with us, so that it's not just a priest and a rabbi giving their religious views on why some either challenge challenge God or abandon God or try to bring in rationality, that it's to bring in the source, to bring in a different perspective so that we can actually really unpack beyond the level of the surface.
Yes, I mean, last week we talked about this, but we realized if we do this part two, we definitely need to bring on some folks here. So we did. So we did bring on John Tarek, who's the executive director of operations over at ECO, which is a part of or a Presbyterian denomination. And John, it's good to have you on here. I know we are excited to have you on here because not only are you you're based in the States, but you also get a global perspective on what's happening with the world and how other civilizations are acting and how they're interacting with religion. So thank you for being on here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really relish the opportunity to kind of discuss what I'm seeing, at least from my perspective as an evangelical Presbyterian, and look forward to the discussion for sure.
And you're a stats guy too, so I like how
I'm a numbers guy. Yeah, yeah. This is my second career. I was on Wall Street for 13 years, and so numbers are special to me.
Right. Now, every time we get into conversation, it's always good. You always are very aware of the stats that are happening from all the major research groups, and so that definitely helps with everything. And then we also got Mr. Joe Beck. So Mr. Joe Beck is the founder of the Humanists of the Treasure Coast, and it's great to have you on here because why would we not move forward with this this conversation without having someone to represent from a non-religious community and get your take on these thoughts that we have about atheism, agnosticism, and the rise of it. And so it's great to have you here, my friend.
Well, thank you. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the values of humanism, because it helps to educate people that we go way beyond, we don't find there's a God.
Oh, yeah.
We believe, in the golden rule that we share with most of the religious organizations.
And we'll be curious to find out about what does that look like, what does the service look like, or your gatherings, and then what's very similar to religious organizations, what's a little different, but most importantly also to get your thoughts on some of the trends that are happening right now involving faith and religion in the States and how we reflect that also compared to other countries around the world. So. All right, so this is going to be a fun podcast. We're really excited about this. Leave a comment below in whatever platform you're looking at about this great topic, and we'll bring it on the air in the future. And we are so grateful when you do share this. You throw it on your social media and you say, hey, there's these two goofy guys, a priest and a rabbi, who have great guests on, and to talk about hot topics. Just to share it away and to subscribe. It's great to have a community here that we can talk about these topics. So God bless you, and here we go with a priest and a rabbi.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Very good morning to you all here in the Treasure Coast. This is Father Christian Anderson, along with the best-looking rabbi you've seen this side of the Mississippi. It is Rabbi Durbin from Temple Beth Hayam. And my man, it is so good to see you, as it is every Friday and probably every other day of the week that we keep on bumping into each other.
You know, your Hebrew is getting much better. Much better. Week by week, it's getting better.
Yes, I only have two words to focus on, so I'm glad that I'm actually making progress.
It's good.
Yeah, No Child Left Behind, man. That was me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was a 90s kid. So my brother, you know, we got to bump into each other this weekend. We were at the Baccalaureate and over at the Palm City Prez. And all of the bright, shining faces, I think they were all from Martin County High, weren't
mm-hmm.
they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you got up there and you told a great story about Yitzhak Perlman.
About Yitzhak Perlman, yes.
Yeah, with
yes.
the broken string.
His broken string and just persevered through it and did his performance on three strings on his violin.
That's a great story to preach on, man. That will preach forever.
You know, it's always interesting doing the baccalaureate. And like you said, this year was a huge honor and great privilege to be able to give, hopefully, my words of wisdom after yours. And it was quite amazing to see you come up to the stage and as you started and kind of shook me a little bit with just that pastor voice that if you were sleeping, you certainly were awake through your animated way of cajoling people together. It was fabulous.
The first key is just so people don't fall asleep, you know?
Absolutely.
And I feel like if I dance around enough, then you know.
But you know, it's an interesting story with this Martin County Baccalaureate. So a couple of years ago, and I've been doing the baccalaureate I've been here now in Martin County for 5 years, and I've done the baccalaureate for four. There was 1 year I couldn't do it.
Can you explain what a baccalaureate is to our listeners?
Baccalaureate, from my understanding, is it's a religious ceremony that takes place just before graduation. So for all of our students who graduated high school last night or perhaps the night before from Jensen Beach High School, from South Fork, and from Martin County, congratulations, for a lot of many years of hard work and perseverance. We certainly congratulate you. But the baccalaureate is usually about the week before graduation, and it's just a way of recognition and through inspiration through our clerical leaders to be able to impart words of wisdom. So a couple of years ago, I gave the baccalaureate, and I sit on Facebook on a Palm City garage sales, Stewart garage sales, just, you know, kind of things. And I happen to see this gentleman who had posted that he was giving away for, I don't know, 10, 15 bucks, banana trees. I really hope my HOA is not listening. So I reach out and go, wow, for 15 bucks, sure, yeah. So, you know, we start coordinating this and the other. Tells me where he lives. I go to his home. And he looks at me and he goes, did you give the baccalaureate last year? I said, yeah. He goes, so did I. I'm the other pastor. So I said, wow. And he goes, you want my trees? Sure. So this gentleman who's a pastor in Martin County sold me these massive, one massive banana tree. And, you know, me being the not-so-bright person, thinking I could do it all myself and carry this, like, 45-pound tree into my car and then take it out. And as I'm taking this thing out, I'm like, wow, I feel great. Dig this massive hole. I plant it, right? Next day, I'm taking my kids to school, and suddenly my back seizes up. I can't breathe. And my daughters go, what's the matter with you, Dad? My wife goes, really? Because you worked out yesterday? Are you making this all up? And I go, well, I kind of moved this tree, and I probably shouldn't have. My wife goes, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? But long story short, the amazing thing with this now that's a 10-foot tree, 10-foot tall banana tree.
Oh, it survived. That's good.
It survived. Yeah, good. And 3 weeks ago, it has yielded bananas, which was amazing. Just to see this pod and these bananas that are growing. It's incredible.
And the pastor was?
Was it
Chris Reagan?
Yes.
Yeah. You come and turn next to me, and I couldn't hear what you were saying. You're like, all I heard during, because someone was giving a speech, you're like, this guy was getting a banana tree. I was like, what are you talking? What? I bet you'd be getting a banana tree.
Well, was
I was
it,
like,
was
you
it,
sound
was
like
it,
Eddie Murphy
was
being
it,
like,
was
I
it
put
like
a banana
you were,
in his tailpipe.
You were so enwrapped in conversation, or was one taking the cocktail napkin and running out one speech?
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to focus and get some notes down.
I mean, because some of us spent weeks writing our speech.
I was fine-tuning.
Fine-tuning.
Yeah, I was surrounded by you and Chris Reagan. I had to, like, come up with something decent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You guys are pretty sharp. Okay, well, today we are continuing a conversation about delving into the continued growth and development of atheism, humanism, secularism in the United States of America. We know that it is also in Western Europe. We've seen a lot of growth, but particularly with the Pew Research and the Barna Group talking about also with the Gen Z and Gen Y, how those stats have doubled. So as people of faith, as a rabbi and as a priest, that interests us to know more about why is that. So today, we talked about this last week, but we want to delve further and bring on some experts and bring on some folks who can go help us go a little bit deeper into this, into the why, and what does this mean for our society as churchmen. But we would be remiss if we also didn't bring in a friend who is also a humanist. And so we have with us today Mr. Joe Beck, who is the founder of the humanist of the Treasure Coast. And so, Joe, it's great to have you here and to be having a good dialogue with you. So welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
And so we have Mr. Joe. And then we also have, can I say Reverend?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Reverend John Tarek, who is the chief, the development.
Executive Director of Operations.
Executive Director of Operations for ECO.
Right.
Which is its own Presbyterian denomination.
Its own Presbyterian denomination, about 400 churches nationwide.
Okay, nationwide. And then you also do a lot of work internationally.
I do, representing the denomination, doing a lot of traveling overseas and connecting and looking at church planting opportunities.
Great. So a big reason why we want to have you on the show, too, is that you also bring a global awareness of just what's happening. As we know that the stats that you see in Western Europe and in the States, it does not match what's happening in the Global South and in many other countries. And so you could probably shed some light on what's going on there as opposed to here. And why is faith thriving in other countries, but here it's struggling?
Exactly. Look forward to doing that.
Yeah, so it's great to have this full crew, and yes, Rabbi, you're just chomping at the bit over there.
Chomping at the bit. I just want to give one kind of disclaimer here too, which is in no way are we trying to impose, in no way are we trying to undermine in any way or to convert in some way or to make from a humanist perspective, an agnostic perspective, or an atheist perspective. We're just really trying to, as Father Anderson, you had suggested, we're just trying to, go beyond the level of the surface and really try to understand why. In no way are we judging or are we trying to, make others see our way so that, we just want it to be a healthy and a respectful conversation on all sides.
Right. But also, Mike, our producer over here, did offer a $100 gift card to the rabbi or myself if we were able to convert Joe to our respective religions. So there's $100 on the line, Joe. So even if you fake it, I'll split it with you.
We can split it. Good.
Okay, great.
Wait, what if you fail? What do I get?
Free hugs.
Okay, fair.
Free hugs. So, yes. All right, so let's jump into this. So I don't know if I know, John, you got to catch last week's episode.
I did.
And Joe, I didn't expect you to be able to catch last week's episode, but Joe, that we're talking about this the movement, which has been more a little more rapid than in the past, of the development of formal organizations of atheism and humanism, or just people saying, especially more in the In a recent Barna study that came out, showing that how in Gen Y, Gen Z, it's doubled, right? That this idea of either just not stating, not only saying they don't go to church or go to a house of worship, but just saying there's no belief in God. And one of the main reasons was that there was a lot of the similar reasons that you see in the past, from whether it's from boomers or from Gen X, whether it's the hypocrisy, other things. But one thing that came up was that a belief that how could they believe in a God that just allows a lot of bad things to happen to people. So we're going to come at you, and Lisa, myself, like in my own naivete here, for yourself, can you give us a little bit of background of, let me say first, of how you grew into your state, your beliefs? And were you at one time a religious person? And then also, the humanist society of the Treasure Coast. Do you find that there was a for many of your members, a religious history, or have they always been just more practicing humanists?
Mm-hmm. Well, for most of our members, they had some type of religion. In my case, I was raised as a Roman Catholic. I find that most of our members take religion more seriously, I would say, than the average religious person. So I was a very devout Catholic. I would go to novenas, went to a Catholic elementary school, then to a public high school. And this, again, I entered the public high school, and I did exactly what the nuns taught me. If someone told a dirty joke, I'd walk away. If someone used God's name in vain, I'd walk away. All of a sudden, I'm getting picked on. I'm really crying at night. I mean, I have no friends. I'm bullied. I'm a strange environment. And I was praying to God very sincerely. And I said, God, you know what's in my heart. And I understand that the more we suffer on earth, the closer we'll be to you in heaven. I don't need a seat that close to you. I'll take something in the bleachers. Please help me to be accepted so I can stop this loneliness. Well, nothing happened. And then I said, God, you know what's in my heart. This is not a threat, but I'm beginning to wonder if you're really listening, because you know that I personally have just about had it with the rejection that I'm experiencing at school. So if I don't hear from you in 2 weeks, I'm just going to assume you're not listening, you're not there, and I'm going to try something else. So nothing happened, and in 2 weeks, I went from being a novena attending Catholic to basically at that point, I would say, being atheistic. And I know many of your listeners maybe aren't sure what an atheist or a humanist is. To be an atheist just means you don't have a belief in the existence of a supernatural being. It doesn't mean that you have to be hostile to the religious community. The humanist community, you know, we believe in practicing the golden rule without any of the supernatural. So we don't find any evidence for the existence of a supernatural being, but we certainly support and want to protect everyone else's right to practice their religion in a way that makes sense to them, as long as neither you or I impose our beliefs on others. And I find we have a lot in common with the rabbis, the ministers, the priests, because we all try to abide by the golden rule. And as I think I mentioned earlier, it's a struggle for us as well. So we don't claim to be perfect. We're as flawed as anybody else.
Sure. And you would say a lot of the folks in your, can I say, congregation, in your group, in your, how do you refer? What would be the right terminology when you all get together, just in the group?
Usually, you know, the organization.
The organization.
We're officially a 501c3. And everyone agrees that trying to organize humanists, they say it's like herding cats, because everyone's an independent thinker, and it's a challenge. I'm not a leader, really. I'm also an independent person. I'm hoping that someone will take over the organization as I get older, who's more leadership oriented.
Sure. And would you say that most of the people in your organization right now have had a religious background?
Right. Most of our people have had a religious background. You know, maybe a small percentage, I'll just guess, you know, maybe 3-5%, had a very, very negative experience with religion. But most of the folks, they just simply, at some point in their life, they just came to the conclusion that this didn't make sense to them personally. So they left the religion of their birth and began exploring other things. And eventually they maybe heard of atheist organizations. And I'm finding the atheist organizations tend to be a little bit more critical of religion than I find productive. So I'd say if you go to a few atheist meetings and a few humanist meetings, I think you'll find that the humanist meetings tend to be more accepting of religious folks and religious doctrine. So like the Jewish congregations, we don't proselytize. We welcome everyone. I'd say we have a probably higher percentage of secular Jews than most organizations, and that's always interesting. And I would say the Jewish members tend to be leaders in most of our organizations. I remember when I was younger, I dated a Jewish girl for a while. So I went to a Jewish synagogue, wanted to learn something about Reform and the Reconstruction and the Orthodox. And I was shocked, because you go into a Catholic church and it's quiet, and everybody's taught to be submissive. You go into a Jewish temple, people are like, Charlie, Seymour, how are you doing? It was a shock. Then the rabbi walks in and people slowly quiet down. And I thought to myself, wow, what a difference between walking into a traditional Christian church and walking into a temple. So I can see where our Jewish members are more accustomed to speaking up and challenging.
We Jews things. Don't just don't know how to be quiet. So Joe, when did the organization, when was it founded?
Okay. Well, I founded the organization in the summer of 2009. And I did so because I wanted to be able to provide support for people who try to be ethical but aren't religious. There's a tremendous amount of discrimination against folks who are non-religious. Now, every denomination in this room at some point has been the object of derision and attacks, et cetera. And so I said I wanted to develop an organization that provided comfort to people who tried to be ethical but weren't religious. And we try to do that. We try to explain the difference between being an atheist and being a humanist. We try to explain that we're not trying to convert your children. We simply want to be treated equally. So we have a variety of battles. We know that secular people serve in the armed services as much as anyone else. There are religious chaplains. The evangelical chaplains in the military are fighting the establishment of a humanist chaplain. I'm also a humanist chaplain through another organization. But essentially, we want to make certain that secular soldiers have secular support. Also, you may be interested to know that if you're a religious group, you can throw a spaghetti dinner as a fundraiser. That's wonderful. We can't do that. We have to abide by the strictest of restaurant standards. And in the writing here in Florida, it specifically says religions do not have to abide by these particular standards. So we're trying to fight for equality, and that continues to be a struggle.
Okay, so why do you think now, more than ever, at least in the States, that we are seeing a rise in the younger generations of identifying with either atheism, secularism, if they would define it as humanism, I'm not sure, but why do you think there's a rise in the States right now?
Well, I think a big factor is people are now coming out of the closet. I mean, I've spoken to people who were war veterans, World War II, Vietnam, other eras. They were risking their life. They come back home, and they were afraid to come out of the closet to let people know they're non-religious. I know people of means who are hesitant to let other folks know. So a large part of this is that people are now feeling more comfortable in coming out of the closet. In other words, you know, the mere fact that you folks invited a representative from a humanist organization, that's something that would not have happened maybe 20 years ago, but it's happening now. So it's no longer, our people no longer pay as severe a price for coming out of the closet as being non-religious. We've always been there, but remember, over the years, we've been one of the persecuted minorities, as the Jews have been, as other religions have been.
Okay, beautiful. So now, John, what is your, we talked yesterday about this, and do you think also there's been, obviously, each generation there's a huge shift in how we approach just being a society, being a community here, definitely within the States, within our own culture. Do you agree with Joe that the population has always been there, now has a freedom to come out, or do you think there's also some other factors that might be leading to this?
Well, I think that's a great point. You know, the idea that Christianity is no longer the dominant culture in our nation. I think that's probably been the case for a little while now. I think the statistics are just catching up to the reality of that. So when we hear numbers like that the group, the non-affiliated group, the nuns as they call it, is 27% of the nation, I mean, that's a huge number. It's never been there that I know records of. So people are feeling safe. And what a lot of our Christian stats folks would say is that it's the death of nominal Christianity, meaning that people in name only, we're only doing it to be part of the dominant culture anyway. So now they're being honest and saying, hey, I don't have this affiliation. I'm going to affiliate with the group that I feel most comfortable with. So it's an honest depiction of what's happening. But what I keyed in on Joe's story was in his story that the community was missing in your Catholic upbringing. And you didn't have that sense of community. And so you felt ostracized from the community, and therefore you kind of went away from that. And I think the lack of community in our society today is probably one of the biggest factors, because faith is transferred a lot of times in the community, and we are not doing all we can to foster the community in both our faith traditions, Or anywhere. Numbers are down with any membership organization. You look at youth sports, you look at the scouting program, you look at civic organizations like Rotary, and those numbers are all going down. The community, the aspect of belonging to something, is not there. And therefore, I think we're just going to see the numbers continue to plummet, because we're not really doing all we can, at least in the Christian tradition that I'm in, of fostering the community inside the church, if that makes sense, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where is the missing piece there? What do you mean they're not fostering the community well enough?
So what Joe said, when he went into a Catholic church, what did he experience? It was just completely quiet. People were reverent. People weren't greeting one another. And just he had a different experience, obviously, in a synagogue. But I find that a lot of times in the Sunday liturgy that we run, and you have more liturgy than we do in the Presbyterian church, but where's the time to really foster community in the Sunday morning experience? And how many of our people are giving us more than just a Sunday morning experience as far as their time is concerned? So what are we doing to learn each other's stories? What are we doing to get into accountable relationships so that faith and stories and can be transferred from generation to generation, but also just being known for why we believe and how the Holy Spirit, in our case, has affected us so much that we have been transformed by that? I mean, that's the kind of stories that people need to hear, and I think that would foster growth and interest in what God's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We talked about this last week that the, you know, Rabbi, you and I went back and forth to this idea of community, and then also, but I agree here with John, is that a big piece of the faith walk is having this transformational experience with the higher power, right? So in our case with Jesus Christ, and having the Holy Spirit move through your heart, and you feel like your life is being transformed for the better, that is a supernatural experience that you can't really just put your finger on, but it changes you and it leads you, and it opens up your heart to an incredible amount of love and to serve the community, serve the church, serve our Lord. And without that, and without those opportunities to hear those stories and to be mentored by people who have gone through those journeys, and to be going to retreats or whatever it is that your church can provide, then yes, it can really quickly turn into a place you just show up on Sunday, you sing some songs, you get some coffee, you talk to some people, and then you leave and you run off to soccer practice.
Yeah.
And then that might not be strong enough legs to stand on, because you might be able to do that at the YMCA too. And Rabbi, you talked about how, you know, the Jewish center can provide all that stuff without a lot of the heavy religiosity.
Sure.
Right.
But I also wonder, too, you know, given the example of religious strictures, right, we don't question. This is what you do. This is, you know, what we say. This is what we believe. You know, as a Reformed Jew, I mean, it is incumbent upon us to not take things at face value. You know, we read the Torah, we read the Bible, but it is interpretive, and we interpret it. And I mean, you know, for us as at Temple Beit Hayam, I mean, we have a Torah study every single Saturday morning, just after our Shabbat morning services. You know, and we unpack the text, and we question the text, and we question God, and we question our biblical characters, and what is the moral lesson that we learn out of it, and how do we take this for ourselves to give greater meaning and insight? You know, one of the classic examples, Genesis 22. Right, God says to Abraham, "Take your son and offer him up as a sacrifice." Well, you know, as a modern Jew, there's a part of me that says that is not a God that I believe in. I don't believe in a God that is vengeful. I don't believe in a God that asked me to take my son. I believe in a God of compassion and a God of mercy, a God of understanding. And if God is the all-knowing and all-encompassing and all-omniscient God, then God should know my inner thoughts and my inner devotional ways of accessing God. You know, so we don't take it at face value. I mean, one of the other, you know, classic examples out of Leviticus, you know, a man shall not lie with a man as he does a woman. And I know I'm opening up a can of worms here. But, you know, as a progressive, as a Reformed Jew, I say I take the Torah seriously. I don't take it literally. And I look at it that if I am created, and as we went back a couple episodes ago, if I'm created B'Tselem Elohim, if I'm created in God's image, therefore I am created that I have the ability to love God, and that God has the ability to love me, irrespective of whatever sexual orientation that I choose for myself, right? As a Reformed Jew, I say it may not be the lifestyle that I choose for myself, but damned be me if I judge somebody else, because somebody else, their love for perhaps somebody of the same sex, it's not for me to judge. And at the end of the day, if they love somebody, isn't that what life is about? Isn't it about the fact that I am open to loving somebody, and somebody is up to loving me, that it doesn't matter. Where obviously if we take it from a different segment, you know, we look at it from a, say, an Orthodox perspective, it is the letter of the law. I mean, it says it there. Where I think it is interpretive in how we understand it and how we bring, you know, for us as a Reform community, it's about how we bring meaning and understanding to our text in today's understanding. What does that mean for me? Can I question my material? Absolutely. Can I question God? Yes. That's what God's here for. And you know, for Joe, I'm interested to kind of, you know, understand. I mean, are there texts that as humanists you go back to? Is it taking the Bible and just in inserting instead of God, humanity? Is how does that work in terms of identity or ideology?
That's a great question. For the humanist community, we basically rely upon the Humanist Manifesto. And there have been three. There was one in 1933, one in 1973, and one around 2003. So you may want to Google, if you were to Google Humanist Manifesto 3, Humanist Aspirations, you would see that the humanist community is basically committed towards rationality, compassion, empathy, many of the same values that we share with the Jewish and the Christian communities. As I heard the rabbi speak, I'm thinking that the road to more members for traditional religions is again to be more loving. People don't want to hear condemnation. I think the evangelical community, my understanding, is losing money and losing membership because they've been backing some folks who are very, very crude and vulgar and lack empathy and lack compassion. So I know our biggest fear is not the religious person who's going to attack us, but a rabbi or a minister who's going to be kind and compassionate. I mean, those are the ministers who will draw people away from our organization, because your organizations, the traditional religions, already have a lot of the structure that we don't have. We're just slowly developing. So we instituted weekly meetings maybe 3 years ago. We're trying to do more social building, family support, potluck dinners. It's a struggle. And again, we don't have a history of thousands of years of doing this.
Yeah, and I think that, because that's what I was really interested in, is how do other organizations, non-theistic organizations, create this structure where you have, I mean, the advantage of a religion is that there's a statement of beliefs, which you guys have a manifesto, right? But there's a statement of beliefs. There is, you come in, there's music, there's worship. We're singing together in a community. We have, at least in a liturgical church, like the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterians have liturgy too, where there are some set prayers that we're going to say together. We might hold hands when we do that together. We're preparing ourselves for this moment. We're going to break bread together for the Lord's Supper, which brings us again to experience community at St. Mary's as a part before, while we're taking the communion. We all gather around the altar and there's holding of hands and the children are there. And that experience for the people of St. Mary's to look into each other's eyes and this very mystical-like experience of this holy mystery that's happening, where we feel the Spirit is being called down upon this bread and this wine. And there's no other place you really experience that in your normal day life, your other communities, whether it's the basketball game, basketball practice, gymnastics, or the bridge club, right? So it's religion identifying what is there that is being offered that you can't get anywhere else. And I think sometimes, as in the religious world, we spend so much time, it's this push pull. Like we spend a lot of time trying to meet people where they're at, right? And so then we might dilute the religious message or the religious vehicle in order to be able to speak really. To be at everyone's level. However, also got to know there's something going on here that you can't find anywhere else. Mainly this relationship with one another through a mystical, highly spiritual experience that we believe through Jesus Christ. Right? If we miss that, then we lose it all. But you know, I remember watching a video of it's in London. They're starting to sprout up around now, I think, the country, where they've taken the church service. I think it's an atheist organization, but I think they're more humanist, and they really follow a lot of the structure, but they just replace it and change it to fit their beliefs. So there's music, there's worship, there's a passing of the peace. So we get together, we have peace with one another. There's an kind of an agape meal that happens. So there's a meal that has together. They state their beliefs. They have some form of like kind of like prayer, and it's in an abandoned church, right? So they bought a church that shut down. So they can have that structure and that togetherness that's all pushing people together to have community and to share love with one another, but just using the church format, right?
Just to say, I think we spend so much time defining groups or organizations by what they are against rather than what they are for, right? I mean, that's a tribalism that's happening in our nation now. So as the lone evangelical here at the table, you know, I think that most people will view the evangelical movement as right now in this time in history, and they just know what we stand against, but not what we are for. You know, we are for love of one another. That's what we stand for. But because our society today is just so polarized, people are going to look at face value as what we are against. So the atheist movement is, okay, it's against God, therefore I view them only as that, right? And so in a progressive movement, let's say I'm against tradition or orthodoxy in certain senses. So everybody's defined by what they're against. How do we build community if we continue to define people by what they're against and not look for what people are for? You know, what are we out there to do? We are out there to love one another in the name of Jesus Christ. We are to make disciples. In my case, right, that's what I am commanded to do. And I do that in an apprenticeship, in a community type way, where I'm coming alongside of others, loving them where they're at, and just teaching them what I know. It's just an apprenticeship type of thing. Now, that is so hard to do in our culture today. I mean, you could look at why are there not more plumbers and tradespeople? Because there's no apprenticeships for people to get into to do these things, or they look that poorly. We're just so fractured and just defining each other by what we are against instead of trying to come together, build community in some new way. And I think that's gotta be the place where we start.
Even when you take the etymology of the word, right? Community comes from the root, from the word common,
right?
Commonality. What brings us together? What makes us have a sense of belonging? And I think that there is strength in community, into whatever community of commonality that we are together with. You know, John, I'd be interested to hear from, you know, your experience, you know, around the world from that global perspective, being in South America, being in throughout Europe. You know, do you see a major difference between South American communities, European communities, here in the United States?
Let's so that's a great question. So let's jump into that after the break. So when we get back from the break, John, lead us in that, because now we want to be able to compare when we get back. Religion is flourishing in many other parts of the world. And what are some key differences between how civilization and hence societies experience one another, either from a groupistic and individualistic perspective compared to the rugged individualism of the United States? And maybe we can reflect even deeper about what's going on here. So we will do that when we get back from break. Again, the phone number here is 772-220-9788. If you have any questions for Reverend John or for Joe Beck, we love to have you call in. So we're going to take a quick break, come back, and to continue this discussion on the development and really just analyzing the rise of humanism and atheism in America, the whys about that, and what's going on in our own society. So we'll see you in just a few.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-9788. WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here, on a priest and a rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. All right, welcome back here to A Priest and a Rabbi here on 1450 WSTU and also on the podcast. You can catch us on A Priest and a Rabbi on all major platforms. We'd be so grateful if you could jump onto that podcast, any platform, and hit that subscribe button, give us a ranking, and leave a comment, too, about what's going on there.
Give us 6 stars.
Yes, 6 stars. 6 out of 5 stars. That'd be great. And share with it on social media. We're always so grateful when we see that. We're continuing our conversation here. You know, we have Reverend John Tarek. And we have Joe Beck, who's here representing the humanist organization of the Treasure Coast. And we are continuing this understanding of trying to really parse of why do we see, especially in the States, since we're Americans, but we also know this is happening in Western Europe, this continued rise in the numbers of people who are the D-O-N-E-S, the Duns, who are just kind of done with religion, who are openly saying, I'm more of a secularist, I'm more of a humanist, or I'm more of an atheist. And so, John, during our conversation we had yesterday, you were making some remarks about this also is just reflective of just a movement that's happening in our culture that really potentially that our culture is, at least in the States, compared to other cultures that you see when you travel around the world and you're planting churches and working with other congregations, up towards just individualism and wanting to really be enjoying kind of this separation. And if they are going to commune and be connected with people, it will be through digital waves, through social media, or through other places, which is sort of superficial.
Right. Yeah, and I just got back from Brazil. I was in Brazil about 3 weeks ago. It's my fourth trip down there, and the reason I'm going is to look for church planters who want to plant churches for our denomination, two Portuguese-speaking folks, Brazilians who have immigrated over here. I go there to Brazil, and it's just amazing to me how much the people want to be together. I mean, they just love to be together. It's always a party. There's never a sense of time. They just love one another that much. Now, this is in the same culture where they just had a political election that was very similar to ours. I mean, it was very toxic. The person who got elected, President Bolsonaro, was stabbed during the campaign. He almost lost his life. I mean, it was bitter on both sides. They also take their sports very seriously. So whatever football team, soccer team here – you follow, that's your club, and you wear the colors proudly. Now, here's the thing. They could argue all day long about the football club that they support or the political candidate they want to have elected into office, but at the end of the day, they're all hugs. They're all gathering around the table at lunch and in dinner, and they all love each other. Now, that is not the case I have experienced here in the United States, where there is at least you can dialogue down there and really be passionate about what you believe in or who you believe in, and still at the end of the day, desire to be together. And even for a mild extrovert as I am, it is exhausting to be in that culture because people just want to talk and just hang out all day long, and I love that. But in the areas that Christianity is growing the most, this is the kind of culture that exists. So we see that in areas like the Middle East, where it's still a very social culture, it's very family-oriented, extended family-oriented. You know, we don't have that extended family orientation anymore here in the United States. I grew up in a place where all of my cousins lived probably in a 15-mile radius in Long Island, and we got together regularly to have that extended family and community, and everybody knew each other, even the troubled kids, and I wasn't one of them. But you knew everybody's story and which kid was doing better than others. It was just a place where you were known. You had great community, and you were somewhat as transparent as you could be in our society. Where none of that exists here today, it still exists in places where we see religion on the move and people just striving to be together to share their stories and to pass the faith along.
So why do you think that the individualism has really begun to? I mean, we always know that America has been founded on this idea of rugged individualism, but. There was a time probably where community was much more celebrated. Why do you think now, definitely within the last 10 years, would you say, has there just been an increase of people really, really moving away much more adamantly from a groupistic viewpoint?
Yeah, and I would say like we're behind Europe in the trend of Christianity being, you know, pushed aside. But you go to Europe and you travel the cities, and of course there's areas for people to walk and to gather. And there is, that is happening. People are out in the plazas. But they're not really talking to one another, are they? They're very individualistic. I have not experienced the warmth as I would in a place like South America where people are, you know, desiring to know their neighbor. I think technology has a lot to do with it. I think that the idea that we can put up whatever image of ourselves we want on Facebook or whatever social media source you like or tool that you like, where I can be known only for that, is a real reason why people don't want to get into community, is that they'll be known for something other than the image that they project on social media and technology. I think Europe had cell phones. They're more prevalent, at least, far before we were. And social media, I think, all started at the same time. You're looking at, what, 06 for Facebook? The iPhone came out in 07. All these recent developments in technology have driven us to a place where we are not communing together. Even kids together will come together to play, but they're playing alone together. They're on their screens together, you know, doing their own thing on their screens, and it's just not the same community. So how are we learning each other's stories? How are we learning why God is so important to us, and how I was transformed by God? How are we telling those stories? We're not doing it even on Sunday morning because our liturgy doesn't allow that time and space to do that. So we need to change some of those things.
So what do you think the answer is?
What do I think the answer is? I think we need a more open, honest dialogue about where we are as society with this technology and really start to realize that we're headed in a bad direction. I think it's coming. I think that the time now – 2 weeks ago I was forwarded three different articles by three different people on the subject of loneliness. Mm-hmm. Joe mentioned this idea of loneliness, right? This is an epidemic. We have the highest rates of suicide, highest rates of depression, and this epidemic of loneliness happening in our society. If we would wake up and realize what is happening around us, realize that we are being used by a system. I have two news feeds on my phone, like Fox and CNN, and it'll come across, and the same news story will be reported completely differently on my news feed. And I wonder, okay, am I being played? I think I am being played. I think I'm being played by technology. If we were just to wake up and realize that we are subject to a system that is absolutely driving us apart, and I think there would be a revolt in some way. I know it's hard because I, you know, my phone's in my pocket. I had it there on the desk for a second. I put it back in my pocket, but we're addicted to this thing. It keeps us connected, but it keeps us separated at the same time. Connected to what? Connected to a manipulative system. And so I think we just have to wake up. And I think that day's coming. There's been enough writing on it, enough realization that we are overly medicated, and, you know, the highest amount of opioid drugs are like 97% or even higher than that of all opioid drugs are sold in the United States. Why is that? You know, why is that? What is happening to us as a society? We're over-medicated, not talking to one another, our neighborhoods. We have this community that is completely fractured, and we just need to wake up.
But I think also it's our culture, it's our community. We in the United States are so heavily focused on productivity rather than, you know, you look at other Western European countries. Look at Scandinavia. You know, they have a shorter work day, which allows more time for family, more time for self-reflection, more time for play than for work. And look, I'm not advocating – I mean, I work 60, 65, 70-hour work weeks. I'm not advocating for the 25-hour work week. But I think it's about finding that balance. And I think in the United States, we have not found that balance. And I think we're going to get to that tipping point, you know, John, as you suggested, we're going to get to that tipping point fairly quickly where, you know, I mean, we just read the other day the report on burnout, on how quickly we are burning out in our professions that leads to challenges within our communities, challenges within how we access belief, how we bring that sense of importance and meaning into our lives. We're slaves in some way.
Well, I'm wondering, that's why, I mean, the two fastest growing religions in the States right now are Islam and Mormonism. And I'm wondering from a Mormonistic standpoint is just that, and I have a gentleman in our congregation who's, he would still say he's Mormon, and he says what attracts me to Mormonism is this huge attention put upon the family, that everything is about the family, that your family comes first. So if there's a soccer game on Sunday, no, that's time to be with the family and time to be with the church members. And so there is a religion that's saying, if you're going to be a part of this and you really want to be a part of this, that you need to put the priority straight, which is about the community that we celebrate together. And if you're out in Utah, I mean, it's not just the church. I mean, this is really the whole neighborhood, the whole town, wherever you're at in Utah or in Idaho or Wyoming. And so that idea could be responding, John, to what you're saying, that there's folks who are saying, but this is awesome. I mean, I don't know if I agree with all the different beliefs, but that to have a group of people who are just so in love with community, supporting one another, being there for one another. So if there's a death, if there's a birth, if there's whatever, you know, there's going to be 10 people at your door saying, here's a meal, you know, because now not anymore. Your neighborhood might not do that. You know, once upon a time, maybe they did that. If you're not heavily involved with a church, hopefully your church does that, but maybe not. Right. And if some of the churches get really big, hopefully you're part of a smaller group inside of a church where that small group is like, oh, You know, Matthew just had a baby, so let's all get together and do a food train and to support them. So, you know, I wonder. I don't know if that's true. If that's why big reason why Mormonism is one of the fastest growing religions in the States.
But decline, they're increasing, but at a decreasing rate every year. You know what's actually interesting? I mean, there's more witches than there are Presbyterians in the United States, which is, you know, horrifying to me. But it's just interesting to know that some of these organizations are growing, but. You know, what are we doing?
We're increasing broom sales. That's what we're doing.
It's just unbelievable to me, right? Like, where did we go wrong? But again, I think it's just the breakdown of the family structures, breakdown of the community that we experienced even as an Xer, right? 49 years old. You know, that family, all our family members moved apart. We went to Florida from New York. We went all over the place chasing careers because of, as Rabbi said, you know, that we were chasing an idea of success that drove this idea of community in two different directions.
Now, Joe, would you agree with this that if when you look at the breakdown of, would you say that this breakdown of connection that we have with one another, this breakdown of community that we have throughout the nation, the breakdown of the family structure, is a major a motivating factor for the drop in numbers at churches, or would you say it is also because people have just lost faith in the structure of the church because they've been hurt, or they don't believe in a God who would do such horrible things, or they think it's a place of hypocrisy, or is it D, all the above?
Well, again, I'd like to piggyback on what the rabbi had said before when he spoke about our culture. In other words, we mouth things like valuing family, okay? Yet we don't have policies. We don't have social policies that help families. We know now people are almost laughing if there's a shooting and someone says we're going to offer thoughts and prayers. I'm surprised at how negative the general population is towards that statement. And again, I hope that there will come a time when the atheist community, the humanist community, the religious community can join together and really live by the values that we talk about, the idea of loving one another. You're not loving one another when you're living in a country that has – we've had massive wars over the years, Vietnam. We've had the invasion of Iraq, where Americans are dying and Americans are paying millions of dollars in armaments, while the armaments companies are becoming rich, soldiers are suffering, and the churches have not taken a strong stand on this. I'm hoping that the religious and the non-religious community can join forces and say we demand a government that will live by the best values of religion and secularism. I think that's a dream, but I think it could happen. You know, the mere fact that we're talking here today, the mere fact that I know I had a chance to talk with other religious people, Reverend Reeves over at Martin Memorial, and I'm blocking out her name. Yeah, Mindy Serafin in Indian River County. These are dedicated Christians. They really believe in love and compassion and empathy, and I'm hoping we can all work together to promote that. It'll help with membership, and we know we need a more caring society. Because when you talk about the opioid problems, the suicide problems, we're talking about people who are alone. They're feeling alone, and anyway.
Yeah. Yes. And would you say so? What I'm hearing from you is it's more of the breakdown of community than it is for the actual the big five reasons of why people a lot of times leave a religious organization. You know, hypocrisy, that they've been hurt. They don't believe in a God who could do such things. And so from what you hear from folks, is it do you hear that a lot of why they became humanist, or is it just that?
For our people, most of the folks became humanists because they just looked at the tradition. You know, traditionally religion helped you to understand why there were earthquakes while people were dying and suffering. And once you say, you know, I don't believe this anymore, I don't think that's an explanation anymore. We know that once cultures become more educated, they tend to leave religion and go into a more rational based living. Now, we don't, as a humanist, I don't seek the demise of religion. I hope that religion will live up to its best values, and then we can all work together on these common values. But I don't see that happening in America. It's possible, but it's not happening now, and I think we're all suffering.
All right. So we know one thing that we definitely all agreed on here was that the support of community and how to be able to facilitate the gathering of people together, because we know that's where the wealth is. We know that's where the fruit is born. That's how we support one another. That's how we love one another. That's how we hear each other's stories. I think from a spiritual perspective, that's where we can share our testimonials of how God is working in our lives and how God is an all-powerful supernatural God that changes us. And then from a humanistic perspective, that how to be able to lift up the golden rule together. But we all need to be there. We all need to be in community for this to happen. So there wasn't too many major religious figures who just went off and just were by themselves and were like a hermit who was constantly gathering and gathering and being with the people and lifting up leaders and supporting people. So that is it's a missing piece, but hopefully that the response, and there is a pushback for that. And whether that means that we have days where we tune off all the Wi-Fi and so we are just forced to really connect and just talk with one another. I don't know. Maybe there'll be retreats one day where you just go and there's no cell reception and you just have to be with people. So, Rabbi, any final thoughts over there, my friend?
Well, I think just to go back on that word, you know, community and commonality, I think it is about, you know, how we can embrace our similarities. What do we believe? How do we bring more semblance of peace and harmony and coexistence in our world?
And how do you practice community today? I think it's one thing for us all to think about, is that we, even within our own families, with our own organizations, to be aware of how much time we spend on our phone compared to how much time we're talking with one another, just even with our spouses, with our friends, with those at work, that the phone goes down, and with your children, that the phone goes down, they're just forced to play like a good old game where you got to go on, be creative and start meeting up with the neighbors next door. So, all right, that's about it. You can catch us on our podcast, A Priest and a Rabbi, over on any of the major platforms. Joe and John, thank you so much for just bringing so much goodness and wisdom here. God bless you all, and we'll see you next Friday.